Blog Talk Radio.
Black power. This is the Prince of Pan-Africanism, Dr. Umar Johnson. Whenever I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma, I'm listening to The Bobby Eaton Show, 89.9 FM KBOB, for news, information, and critical analysis. The Bobby Eaton Show, that's where Dr. Umar hangs out.
The home of the Bobby Eaton Show, the Juice Radio Show, and Two Dogs Radio Show.
Yeah. I do it big.
Okay.
You better R-E-S-P-E-C-T me.
Tulsa, Oklahoma. Stay connected and call us now at 646-716-5525 and press 1 to go live.
All right. Hey, welcome to the Bobby Eaton Show. This is where we tell our stories our way, out of home, out of Black Wall Street, Tulsa, 1921 massacre. And we just do everything in our community to help support our community. And it's all about community, community, community. So today, hey, we got a great show going on. Hey, Chief and Christy and Regina Goodwin is in the house. And we're just going to be chopping it up. But we're going to talk about something very serious and very dire to our hearts. That's a mass grave cover-up that the city did here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I mean, I was so upset when that was happening. It was crazy, you know. So we want you to dial a number, 646-716-5525, and don't forget to press that one button. I'm trying to get my system going here. I got some technical difficulties going on, and it's just bothering me to death. So you guys stick around. If you hear anything kind of funny or something, you hear anything kind of funny like that, you know, just stick around and don't go nowhere, because Bobby's over here trying to hit some buttons and make everything okay for you. Because, you know, we tell our stories our way over here. It's not young people coming here every Thursday, and they do radio their way. And we want to make sure that you support them. And you can support them by going to the Juice Radio Show Cash App, or come by the studio at 1533 North Norfolk and drop off a donation to help them. We're trying to send them to, this time, to New York City. So that's here they headed up by Ramal, the hometown heat. And boy, we just love us some Juice Radio Show. You know, young people doing good things and being positive and things like that. In the studio, Brother Chief, how are we doing, man?
We're doing good, man. My daddy used to say, just because you're moving don't mean you're moving forward. So
that's
we're
true.
Trying to move forward.
Trying to move forward. Miss Christy, what's going on?
Hey, hey.
Hey, she should say, hey, hey. All right, well, that's good. Regina Goodwin.
How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, doing good. Hey, you guys, welcome to the show. And I'm glad you can be here. We've been planning this for a little while. Hold on. There I go again. And we've been planning this for a little while, and now we're here. So tell everybody a little bit about yourselves, and then we're going to get into talking about these mass graves.
All right. I'll start. I'm going to keep it simple for what we're here for. Remember the Mass Graves Oversight Committee, and just here to let people know the truth about what's going on and, you know, to ensure that we can dissolve some of the fallacies that are taking place in the city.
Well, that's good. What do you think, Christy?
My name is Christy Williams, and I am a member on the 1921 Tulsa Mass Graves Oversight Committee.
Great. And we, come on.
And I'm Regina Goodwin. I'm a descendant of 1921 race massacre survivors and on the Public Oversight Committee and state representative.
Great.
Tulsa, Greenwood.
Welcome to the show. You know, I do this show 3 days a week, and I got our community coming in here all the time. Somebody's coming in here to talk about issues of our community. And one thing that's been very disturbing is these mass graves. These mass graves. Now, I noticed something. I don't know if you guys probably noticed it too. During the centennial, they stopped production on their mass grave, didn't they? Or did they?
Well, they stopped before that, actually.
Even before that.
Yeah, but well, let me put it like this. Some of them stopped. We kept doing the work we do, right?
Yeah.
But you got people from
the city.
Yeah, you got people who it's all about dates and cosmetic look, appearance. You know what I'm saying? How do we make the city look good? Right? It was about, you know, let's clean up house, we got company coming kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you had people who even in that aspect were leveraging the history as it relates to the mass graves investigation. You know, you got Scott Ellsworth who just wrote a book. And, you know, you start to discover all this as we go through this journey. And you hear about these discussions that take place in this book launching and just the timing of everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we could have been going for, you know, throughout May, for that matter. You know, we didn't have to start June 1st. Why did we start June 1st? Who picked that date? Why was that significant?
Who did?
Right? You know, we start asking those kind of questions and we start looking at who benefited from that date being chosen. So, you know, that's what I'd like to say about that matter.
The city, to me, has been very disrespectful in what's been going on over there without consulting the community. And, Regina, you spoke about this. I saw on television about them not letting us know what they're doing. And they never – see, for me, they always never consult with us. So it's like they take up our messages on our streets that are laid down. They do things, and they just never consult with us. How you feel about it?
So, Bobby, basically, this is you go back 2.5 years. I've been saying the same thing, that we are to be the Public Oversight Committee, but the public has come out. They've led to where possible graves could be. And they've not been heard. So we've not in any way heard what the community has asked to happen. They had a plan, and basically, I say it all the time, you know, they call us a public oversight committee. I think we're the public out of sight committee, and I think that's how they continue to do what they do. But it's not because we haven't been at the table and offering a good work product and suggestions.
It's a challenge, isn't it? Don't you feel that way, Christy?
It's always been a challenge to get anything done right with this city, unfortunately. But yeah.
So what is it that we can do going forward to make this change and to bring about some unity in the community? What do you feel like, man?
We got to be relentless, right? We can't compromise. And that becomes a bigger problem. Like we're so accustomed to placating white fragility, right? And wanting acknowledgement from the city for, you know, like it's some kind of entitlement to be in this position. We warriors on a battlefield, right? You get your medal after the battle, right? After you have won, right? Unless you held a political prisoner of some sorts, right? And in this case, we're all been held prisoner because we're not writing our own history. We're not telling our own story. We're not controlling the narrative. Look at the media now about what's happened with this mass grave and their explanation for the outcome of where how we are, where we are, mm-hmm. right? We have to get in this position where we're so relentless You know, like a child agitating a mother for something in the store. That a smart child, no, I can badger you long enough that you're going to give in to what I want, right? We give in and we accept that it just is how it is. That's just how the system going to be. You know, it's a frequency, right? It's all about energy. Everything is about energy. If we don't build enough momentum, every time we have built momentum to do something big and being able to accomplish it, it's because we built the momentum, right? We didn't accept defeat. In other words, we went into the fight saying we're going to fight not just to be fighting, but fight to win. How do we win? We hold them accountable. We don't never give them a break, right? And that's the problem. They find a way to circumnavigate us. They find a way to divide us. They find a way to put us even at odds with each other, right? Because they know that when people are at odds with each other, they don't do what? They don't talk. They don't communicate, right? This is how we get through, even through your medium. This gives us an opportunity to communicate with people who even that don't want to hear your voice. At least you're going to get to hear the truth today, right? Well, you ain't got to like me, but you need to like the truth and what's happening in this city. So we have to be extremely relentless, and we can't give them no breaks. We can't give them no out. And that's what they hope for. They hope for an out, right? And then we have to be willing to go the distance. Like, how far are we willing to go? Do we just want to complain? Do we just want to fight? I mean, scream and holler? To what extent are we willing to go to make a case, to make a point?
So how do we get our people to engage in that, to understand that? Because I realize this, and I'm going to be honest with you guys. There are a few frontline soldiers in this city, a few frontline soldiers who are always in the fight, who always go to the town hall meetings and support our elected officials and do things. A few of them, you can just about name them, you know what I mean, if you really chop it down in this community. And then you have a lot of organizations who are separate in their own little cliques of people of what they do. And, you know, maybe having a radio station, I'm open to everybody in the community who comes in here. But one thing that I've noticed is that we're quick to tell white people stories rather than tell our own people our stories. You know, we're quick to do that sometimes, you know, because I believe in this. I believe you should come to black media first before you go to white media. I think you should go to the Oklahoma Eagle. You should come to KBOB, Black Wall Street Times, Greenwood Tribune, Tulsa Star. I believe that you should bring that information here so we can get it out to our people before we give it to them, you know. And I'd be preaching this all the time. I say, how are we going to grow if we're making them always grow? See, we got to strategize our thinking process. Strategize. Like they did back in the day, back when your dad Ed Goodwin and my dad and them was back there, the men was getting together and they were strategizing for protests and for things. They were getting together, and even in that barbershop over there, Don Ross, my daddy, Homer Johnson, all of those old timers, Reverend Chappelle, they was coming over there and they was talking that talk. You know, your daddy was coming over there, Mr. Goodwin, and I was a little boy and I used to say, what these men doing over here just sitting around? You know, why they ain't got a haircut, why come they ain't going home? Because they was talking that talk. They didn't need to call the police to put out fires in our community. They didn't need to. They didn't have to. They could put out fires themselves. Strong men. Strong. But we live in a different time, in a different society, to whereas things have changed, standards have changed, and stuff like that. And you got a lot of women out doing stuff nowadays. I'm looking, I'm saying, wow, the women is doing everything. You know, where the guys at? You know, and I'm like, I must be old or something like that, coming from an old narrative or old perspective, but it's like the civil rights movement of the 60s, you had Malcolm, you had Martin, you had SCLC, NAACP, the Black Panthers, and it went on and on, Urban League. You had all of these black organizations. They were different, but they were fighting for the same cause, civil rights, equality for one and all. And I'm like, today we're kind of skeptical about who we want to follow. And then there's a lot of hate going on where people are hating each other. Hate, H-A-T-E, hate. Why should I hate you, Chief? Why? When you're trying to do good stuff.
It's ego, man.
It's ego.
It's ego. That's why I tell people all the time, if if social media shut down tomorrow, how many people would have zero identity? No, seriously. I mean, straight up facts.
I understand it.
How many people would have zero identity, zero followers, zero reputation, zero footprint in the community? You could eliminate, you wouldn't, at that point, you could eliminate a whole lot of problems, right? I mean, mm-hmm. instantly, because you force people to look within at that point. Now you really got to ask yourself, am I producing shit or just talking shit?
Yeah, that's right.
Right? And because there's a difference between those two types of people, right? And the people you touch, do you leave them better or do you leave them worse? You got to ask yourself some critical questions when you call yourself a community activist, a community leader, a community advocate, whatever it is, right? You're going to have some disagreements. You're going to have, that's human nature. But the stuff we're talking about is built strictly on ego. And people who can't identify the difference between ego and love for your community, because that's when you're doing that selfless work. You ain't out there saying, I need to get paid. I need to get an applause. I need to get recognition. I don't care about none of that. Mm-hmm. Like all the stuff we doing with this mass grave, ain't nobody celebrating the world or honoring the work we doing. And we ain't asking for nobody to do it.
Yeah.
We doing that for the ancestors, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what matters at this point. So when we go out there and we talk that mess and we go and produce documents and express the truth to our community, we doing it for selfless reasons, not selfish reasons, right? We ain't asking for nothing from nobody from the community because we giving to the community. That's what a gift is, right? You give something without expectation.
We're standing on the shoulders of those who came before us, and we are obligated. It's an obligation.
And an honor.
And an honor to give, to make that happen. It's an honor and an obligation. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Chief is so right about that. You know, this work is really not for the faint of heart. And I see, like, we go to, and just like other people, you know, we go to bed with a lot on our shoulders, you know, and this is heavy. And Regina's been doing this for over 20 years on this thing, and I see why she's like, you know what, when she leave, I know why she left out the room.
Mm-hmm.
So she's tired, and we have to have people to come behind us to carry that fight and continue. And it's sad that we still have to do this, you know. But as you was talking about, you know, the unity thing too, I always tell you this. I say, you know, I'm just not going to follow somebody because they're black, because we definitely have some black folks.
Well, you
got to
have leaders.
You can't
follow everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
So when we talk
not
about
not agree with everybody, too.
Right? So I just really careful when people start talking about the unity thing, because and just because you see people standing up. On different principles doesn't mean you're being divisive or that you're choosing to cause trouble or anything like that. It's just we're standing on our principles and everybody is not standing on those same principles, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But this is where we're at, because there's some groups in this community you'll never see me with.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I realize that also because I've talked to a few people in this community that I actually don't get along with themselves, let alone other organizations,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I'd be like, because this is a community radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say something to me like, well, they're your friends. But yeah, they're my friends. And then I said, I thought you was my friend too.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? So why even make a blatant statement to put me in a box?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go in anybody's box. Bobby Eaton don't do that. You know what I mean? I'm going to have... Even if I disagree with you, I'm still going to have a conversation with you to fill out where you are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know, after having that conversation, I know.
You said something that was really important about how people would come. You like, why are they just sitting around, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you are a worker, that's what you do. You plan strategically. You're not telling all your business and all your plans, and then you got people in the background saying, oh, they should have told. Why come we didn't know about it? Right, because we know that, you know, the mouth can destroy a lot of things.
Oh man,
right?
A pair of lips will say anything.
Right, sink ships in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be strategic because we know they listen. We know they send people amongst us, right, to create animosity, to create division, to create problems. Then on top of all of that, we actually have to go and fight the very system, right, that we're trying to protect them from. You know, it's such a double-edged sword that we got to work with. And, you know, like, that's why I say we have to be relentless. We have to be disciplined. We have to be so focused that we cannot afford for distractions. We don't, you know, people ask me all the time, Chief, why come you don't, why don't you, you need to go address that other mess over there. Okay, what is me addressing mess? First word you just used is mess, right? I wasn't born to be a janitor. I wasn't born to clean up nobody's mess. I'm here to make a change, to make a difference in the community. You got one life to do it with. So what are we here? Why are all of us here today? Because we know that this system, that city we live in, has exploited us for over 100 years and continues to do it, because for the first 100 years, they mastered keeping us silent. Right? We're not living under that reign of oppression anymore like that. You have your voice. You have an opportunity. You have different ways to express your voice, like this microphone. You have no reason to wear the mask today, right? Like that conditioning that we're talking about, and people say, "Man, ain't you scared? Y'all gonna get killed or get shot or something?" We get them threats.
Yeah,
we gonna get them, right? Because what? If you ain't getting them, you ain't doing your job. You ain't.
If you're not getting them, you're not going. You know, I had a couple of ministers come to me and come through that door right there. They say, "Bobby, you too radical." I say, "You too radical the way you talk on the radio." And I said, "Well, hey, it is what it is, and I'm going to be who I'm going to be." You know what I mean? If you don't like it, don't listen.
Yeah.
If you don't like what we do over here, like tonight, we got a conversation going on, and those who are out there who don't like it, don't listen. You know, tune in to somebody else, go over to another radio station or something and listen to them. But if you are listening, we're trying to give you some food that you can help yourself and educate yourself and, you know, be conscious of knowing what's going on in your community. Don't you feel that way, Regina?
Yeah, I was going to say, you talked about what do we need to do to move forward. And I do think that in any time in history, you've never seen a whole bunch of people moving in the right direction. It's always been a small group of folks that are committed to integrity, that have principle, that are going to do right because it's the right thing to do. And I ain't going to never be united with lies. I'm never going to be united with folks that are going to sell out this community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to be united with that's not going to be right for us. So this idea of unity, I think that has to be qualified. What are you going to be unified with? So I think that's important. And I also think that all of us need to be as informed as we can be. So when these issues are going on that you're just not following, but you're a critical thinker and you're able to read between the lines and figure out what's going on. So that's important also. And so everybody's got a role to play, got something to do. And Bobby, it's been this way for a long, long time, but I think we continue to fight as long as we got life. Right. And we're going, that's what we got to do. As you talk about our ancestors and folks that have come before us, we owe it to them.
That's right.
Certainly.
Oh, man, it's a workload that we can never stop doing.
Right.
You know, because they paved the way for so much.
Right.
Look here. I wouldn't be able sitting in this chair right now if it wasn't for my grandfather, who paved the way, who built the building, which my dad allowed me to come in here and do a radio station. Those ancestors and people before us, they did so much. So much legacy has taken place. Hey, Oklahoma Eagle, your people, Regina, so much history, and it's still going on today.
Mm-hmm.
Legacies and stuff like that. So many stories, those walls could talk and, you know, things like that. So we can't give up the fight. We can't do things like that. Chief, you and Christy give tours down there on Greenwood. You guys actually spew the history of it to people who don't know anything about it. And I commend you guys on doing that, you know, because everybody ain't going to do that, and everybody just don't know.
Right.
You know, how would you like somebody down there telling the story, and they really don't know how to tell a story? They're telling the wrong stories.
Yeah, that's the big part. That's that part.
Yeah, and I know you got some like that.
that part right there.
Yeah, right. That part right there, the wrong stories, huh?
Man.
You know, so, I mean, it's just, and then want to talk about what you're doing and right. You know, so that's, Why is our people like that, man?
That
crabs in the bucket syndrome.
I mean, we haven't accepted the fact that we're in a state of war, right? And when you're in a state of war, there are things that are going to happen. And when you don't understand being in a state of war, then you don't understand things like counterintelligence. You don't understand things about how to collect intel. You don't understand agent provocateurs. You don't understand none of the mechanisms that are in place to put us where we are. It's not like a genetic trait, right? It's an engineering. It's a social engineering that's designed in a state of war, right? Because we have to be kept in this position of ignorance, right? What do you think critical race theory is all about?
That's systematically controlled, right?
Right. You know, these things are about keeping not just us, but the rest of society ignorant and believing in the illusion of superiority, right? Which is an illusion,
mm-hmm.
But you got poor folks who thinking they equal to their wealthiest whites as it relates to privilege. So when we have to understand that these events that occur with us are acts of war, consequences of war. Right? That mass grave cemetery. Those are the spoils of war from their perspective. Right? That's a trophy cemetery. All of the founders, all of the people who participated in the massacre, and you got all of these people, these originals, as they call themselves, in that same cemetery. So what are we to them? There's a cemetery in Algiers where a slave master buried his slaves in the same cemetery he was in so they could go on to the next world and serve him. Like this, that psychology, we haven't even tapped into what this is all about. That's why I don't pay attention to trivial matters. Right, the war for it's too big. Even as Sister Regina said, you've always had a small group. The military does the same thing. They don't send the giant army in first. They send in special operation units to go in and create conditions that are ripe for you to now move into a territory because they've dismantled the leadership and made it possible for you to infiltrate those countries. In our case, it's our communities. You find people capable of infiltrating your communities. All they do is create disturbances. That's the design, right? So it's like for every criticism, I should be able to say, okay, you're critiquing my ideas and what I want to do, but where can I follow you to?
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere,
mm-hmm.
Right? Where can I follow you to? Because if you got a superior plan or a better idea, then I will follow your idea. I'll follow your plan, right? Because I ain't operating on ego. I'm saying I'm humble enough to hear that you actually have a better idea than I do. So every criticism should come with a solution. That's where we fail because we actually give an ear. We sacrifice our own head for ignorance, for somebody else's ego. Like, I feel the same way. But what do you think? Right? What do you think? The system is saying we think if we can get enough division inside this oversight committee, we can do whatever we want to do. But if they unify as a whole, we don't have to worry about it. We got people on oversight committee we don't even know who be on the call. And I'm like, at what point are they going to input, right?
They don't say anything.
Right. Native groups and all other kind of groups. How do these people even get engaged in this?
They need to get off of it.
Because that means that potentially they could be having private meetings.
And
expressing themselves as oversight members. But then we have our collective body meeting. It's just that small group, like Regina said, who are the ones speaking up, asking questions, and following up and saying, look, on behalf of the community, everything you all are doing looks like an absolute cover-up and a conspiracy.
And that is a problem that we have with us. You know? It's a problem, you know, and Regina, I know you've gotten some pushback on certain things, you know, throughout your occupancy as a state representative, and it's a fight over there in Oklahoma City, you know, with minorities not really having the voice that they need. And you guys struggle over there, you know. I've been told that you could come up with a bill. Correct me if I'm wrong. You can create a bill that's supportive to black people and pass it on, and it can sit on somebody's desk for a while before they decide to move it on to somebody else's desk before it even hits the floor.
Right. So, Bobby, basically what you said is I'm black, I'm a woman, I'm a Democrat, okay? And at the state capitol, right, we're the super, super, super minority. And long story short, if we have the last day that I was in session, I had a white Republican male in my face telling me, I'm sick and tired of you talking about race. Every time you come to the floor, you're talking about race, and I'm sick of it. He then accused me of some false stuff that never, ever happened. And this is a man talking about, what you going to do? What you going to do?
Really?
Like, he wanted to fight, right?
Uh-huh.
On the House floor. And
on the House floor.
Yes, on the House floor last day. And, you know, you're right. It is difficult. We have bills, and they don't even get past the committee chair. One man can stop 4 months of work that you've been engaged in over the summer, right? And we put a lot of work. We talk to all the experts across the nation, get down to Oklahoma City, and just because he doesn't want to hear your bill, because he might think I talk about race too much, he's not going to hear the bill. If they're not talking about race, who else is going to talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. If we know disparities that exist as it relates to black folks, white folks, if we know we're more apt to get arrested, get murdered, get choked out, we're going to continue to do that work. And so, yes, it's difficult. But it's still a fight worth having. And that's the bottom line. It's a fight worth having. Every time I go up those steps, I know, you know, when I started, we had 32 Democrats. We're down to 19. Every year I go back, we lose more and more Democrats. But there are still issues that we got to raise, still fights worth having. And it's the work that you can do beyond the Capitol that also matters. And that work's getting done every day. So we got to continue to do what we do. But you're right. It's not easy. It's not easy.
I know it's very difficult
yeah.
for you. I know. And see, a lot of times the community don't know that, and they don't realize mm-hmm. the difficulties of our elected officials and what they're mm-hmm. going through.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know. See, people will know Regina Goodwin. They'll know Vanessa Hall Harper. They'll know Kevin Matthews or Jannetty Marshall. They'll know us by name and name only. They won't know what a state representative is or a city council member is. Or a senator is, they don't have those definitions. They just voting for the name,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they know about, the name. And sometimes I think they think that you guys have these God appearances where you can just, you know, walk on water, you know. And
ain't nobody thinking that, Bobby.
Yeah, right. Yeah, some folks think that, well, what is he doing? What is she doing? What are they doing? I say, man, look here, hold on, man. Them people go through some trips on their own trying to get things passed and
right.
policies passed and things like that. I mean, they go through a struggle,
yeah.
you know?
And they got to know this. They got to know a lot of work is still being done on behalf of a lot of folks. They won't see it on Facebook. They won't see it on the news. But people are absolutely being helped every day. This is, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I did not think I was effective or the folks have been helped.
Tell me,
you know,
and I'll tell them.
Right, we could start right
now
if you want to.
Let's do that, you know. That's why I say, come tell me.
She said, I got receipts.
Yeah,
you
got receipts.
And for instance, let's start with the $600,000 that went to the race massacre survivors. That was an effort that I initiated. We worked on for some 3 months, okay? And by God's grace, we were able to give to the three survivors $625,000 in their hands, like in very
between the three of them.
Yeah, between the three,
mm-hmm.
and that was something that I wanted to do because I knew that if the state is not even going to want to do a resolution, I had to fight to get a resolution to acknowledge the 100 years. I said, we've got to do something in the public realm, outside of the Capitol. And I went to black folks in particular, worked with a black 501c3. And we were able to get that done. Tulsa Steps. Tulsa Steps was the 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
But by the grace of God, when we made the ask of individuals, they contributed. And the big ask of Pastor Todd at Transformation Church,
over
3 months,
Todd.
He says yes. And mm-hmm. and that's how that got done. So if I was reliant on the Capitol to get that done, that did not happen. And don't think I haven't asked, right?
Well,
and they tend to give money to folks that are not necessarily doing what's best for this community. And that's how folks get rewarded at the Capitol. If you sell out, if you don't stick to an agenda, if you don't help your community, if you ain't talking about black folks and the disparities, then you tend to get your bills passed or you tend to be heard a lot quicker than others. So I'm passing on now to Chris.
Okay, well, great.
Regina, we appreciate that.
Yes, and Regina, I have to say this because people, for your listeners and for those who don't know, the reason why I'm into community service and advocacy is because of Regina. I always looked at her. I knew Regina when she was Regina, the activist, the concerned citizen who was at NAACP. My first NAACP meeting is actually when I first met Regina. Y'all may probably remember that. But that's where I was like, dang, this lady's going hard, you know, and I was like, man, and she's so loving. Like, people always see her, they feel like she's yelling, but she's really so loving, and she just embraced me. I mean, it's like, you know, auntie, friend. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, that's what it is. And when she ran for office, I knew she was going to be awesome. I remember being at your home with your mother. We all, and you had announced you were going to run for office. I was just a million. Yeah. And so I'm blessed to have like how the Texans came in, because they really care for this community. Like, you know, you guys were advocates for your community first, and still is, who became elected officials. So they've been changing the game, and you created a space where you're showing people that you can speak truth to power, and it's okay. And so people are seeing that, and I it's really good for young folks to see that you don't have to go in and bend over, as they say, and sell out this community. Because look at Regina, look at Vanessa, look at what they're doing. And these are Black women doing this, you know? And so I remember, and I have to just to say this too, because I remember that same night at your house, I remember Bub was there doing his homework, and I still have this. I have to give this to you because this is so funny, but I had read in his journal like last year or 2 years ago in the spiral, old spiral, and he was writing that we were at Regina's house. He said, I'm just ready to go home. I got 12 chips left. Like, he literally counted the chips that he had left. And you know, he's like, my mama always got me at these meetings. And, I mean, he wrote about the hood. It's so hilarious, you know, just seeing that. And I keep telling him, one day you're going to look at this and be like, wow, this is history being made. Yeah. And you were, you know, laying in your living room floor writing it. And we just, you know, at your dining room table. I mean, it was just, I mean, those moments are special. And it makes me think of how far we have came together. And I mean, you just think about it. It almost made me want to cry.
Now, I remember. You almost got me crying. I remember that.
That is fantastic. You know, I've been knowing you and your family for years.
Exactly.
Me and your deceased brother,
Eric.
Yep. We're real tight friends, and he was a trooper too. I mean, he was out there. He was going for, you know, your brother Greg and you. Yeah. And
you know, Eric worked with Dr. Martin Luther King's wife, Coretta Scott King.
At King Center.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was right there and stuff. I mean, he was he's with the ghetto choir even back in the day.
Absolutely.
We had a choir here.
Absolutely.
It's also called the Ghetto Choir.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
No.
And we made records and stuff.
Yep.
And we traveled around the country.
That's right.
You know, I was in the ghetto choir band.
Yes.
And it was probably about, 50 maybe kids and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Headed up by Shirley Scoggins.
Yeah.
Related to Kanye West.
That's Kanye West's aunt. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, musical family. Hey, the Ghetto Choir.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it is.
Why was it that name?
Because she named it.
Yeah, because it was Black folks.
It's Black folks.
From the heart of the community, going out into other states and visiting other cities, you know,
and
represent Tulsa, Oklahoma.
represent Tulsa. And we would go into various highly suburban white folks stuff. You know, and two-day churches and stuff, and we'd be swinging
with the afros
and talking about Black power.
Yeah.
you know, Black Power.
I got to come to your house and take some photo albums. I want to see these pictures.
We were doing all that kind of, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. And we'd be up in their places.
Oh,
and
man.
That's the way it was going on back then.
You must have bring in that too?
But my brother, older brother Eric, my Uncle Bob.
Bob was like a, your Uncle
Speaking
Bob.
Speaking of Bob. Speaking
of K-Bob. K-Bob. Bob. He was like the commentator of the whole thing.
Yeah.
He was a spokesman.
Mm-hmm.
He would get up before the crowd and talk and say some talk back, you know, and then Shirley Scoggins would get up there and direct the choir, and we would be playing in our little band and stuff like that. So it was a unique situation, a very unique organization. Now, we're talking 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very unique situation, bringing about awareness to black people. Yeah, your Uncle Bob was there.
I know it. I remember.
Oh, yeah, Eric and your Uncle Bob.
Absolutely.
And your dad was taking all the pictures.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he was.
Just
click. I mean, he always kept a camera.
Yeah.
Kind of like Kevin Ross today, you know, with a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He was that guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's some Tulsa history that's never really talked about.
Yeah.
And most people don't even remember that even took place back in those days and those times.
But there is a resurgence now in Tulsa today, in America today, because the climate, you know, everybody is, racism is being magnified all across the nation, right? And it's forcing black folks to take a stance on who you are and who we're going to be. And because there are some folks that want to catapult us all the way back to, you know, 400 years ago. And in a way, it is unfortunate. It's a bunch of wickedness, but it also is making certain communities rise up and really, really be the best they can be. So you hear people embracing who they are, not being afraid to speak to the issues without, you know, and let me say this, just for the record, while we're talking, this whole idea of people of color, I don't understand that phrase when folks say, oh, that's a person of color. Because, again, we're not this group of mixed up whatever, right? Because when you do that, last I heard white was a color, right? So this time, that's a person of color. Well, who is that white person, right?
A person of color.
You know? And the thing is, so if we get rid of that and we go back to talking about specifically what black folks need, where black folks need to be as it relates to the economy, as it relates to housing, as it relates to jobs, as it relates to COVID. And what's going on with this in terms of healthcare, right, and the disparities, then we get along further and faster. But if we don't identify it and call it what it is, we're going to be this homogenized group of people of color, and it ain't going to be that pretty.
Who started that?
I don't know. And a lot of folks, it's trendy, and a lot of folks say it. But when I'm in meetings, I'm very clear that I'm championing for black people because I was in a meeting one time actually with a white man. And I'd been very clear about what I was talking about. And we came back after that session. He came back and he had a plan for the Hispanic community. And I said, where in our conversation did you get that we were talking about Hispanic folks? He says, well, everyone was talking about minorities. And I thought, since we're talking about minorities, I got to get to pick one. And, you know, and he comes back and he's talking about that. And all my thing is this, you know, we have to call it and be specific about our intent and our aim, mm-hmm. our objective, and that matters. So,
those are terms that you know, so we can just be outboxed, as Dr. Claude Anderson calls it, people of color, minorities. Those are terms that keep us out of the box and to get rid of us, honestly. And so you're right.
And let's understand race is a social construct for all those intellectuals out there. We understand that was already created, but since we got to call it something, just for the sake of this conversation.
Just call it what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to call it what it is. Right. So as we go back to the conversation about these mass graves, Regina, they came to the city of Tulsa. You did a press release, right, the day before.
Yeah.
How did you find out? Because, Christy, you called me the morning of the mass graves,
mm-hmm.
and you were on the news in the evening time,
mm-hmm.
I guess Kevin Ross found out the information, and notified, I don't know. Tell me how it came about. You want to say, hey, I'm just going for it.
Go ahead. Let me say this, that we did the press conference because, number one, on Tuesday we had a meeting. Chief had written some questions to the city. Mm-hmm. And thank God for Chief that I was about fed up, quite frankly, because what they were talking about wasn't making sense. They were talking about a ceremony that none of us had planned. And I didn't want to respond to something that I had not engaged in the first place.
They planned the ceremony?
Yes. And they told us what the date was going to be, mm-hmm. when it's going to be, et cetera. And we were like, where did this come from? Chief takes the time, thank God, to write these folks back in very explicit terms, and he asked a bunch of questions. When he asked these questions, they're like, well, we're going to have to get back to you. And out of that, Chief was like, well, we need to meet. And we had this meeting with some of the Public Oversight Committee members, right? We asked these questions on Tuesday night. We're talking to Rodrigo Rojas, who has now been appointed by the city. So many people have fallen away. Mm-hmm. And as I saw people moving away from this issue, I knew that they were trying to bring it to a close. I've always felt that way. All right, long story short, go on. We have this meeting. A lot of good questions are asked. The forensic anthropologist is in the meeting. The archaeologist is in the meeting. Someone representing the city. And we're asking the questions. Where did this ceremony come from? Who decided on it? And we're not getting, and they're pointing the fingers at each other, right? And they told us they would get back to us with some answers. We want to know, where is your budget? You're talking about you're putting this on pause, but how do we know you even have money to continue the work, right? Who decided that the work was completed? Because we didn't. The forensic anthropologist told us we're going to be moving further south, right? And we also knew there was some issues with the remains that were before them anyway, right? They're talking about, we've got one that's got a bullet to the skull. Some of these others we're not quite sure about. And they were ready to kind of keep it moving. And they said, we're going to look to see if bullet holes, see who's burned. To Chief's point, if there is no soft tissue on these remains, you can't see who had smoke inhalation. You can't see who was choked to death. You can't tell that 100 years later. So to that degree, they were looking for certain signs of they say, trauma. And up until that point, of some 20 remains, they had one that had trauma. So it's very possible that 19 of them had nothing to do with the race massacre. Very possible, maybe they do. Thing is, why are you going to try to have a ceremony and cover all this up and put them down under the ground? You had no process as it related to extracting the DNA. They don't have a process over the last 2 years. They have not begun to try to reach out to people that might be descendants of people that were documented 100 years ago by death certificate. There are some names that we know about from 100 years ago, and that is who they reportedly are looking for right now, right? As they call it the 18, and I believe it to be 16. That's a whole nother story. But moving further along, they told us they were going to get us some answers to our questions. That was on a Tuesday. So Wednesday goes by, I didn't hear nothing, right? There was no mass communication to anybody, and bits and pieces were trickling in to different folks. There's some lies that were told. There was a lack of transparency, and for some there was some truth told, but that doesn't make for good communication. And so Tuesday passes. There's a timeline here. Bottom line is, I found out on Facebook because of Joy McConduchy saying, being led by God, that she went out there and saw these caskets pods being put in the ground on a Thursday, when I was told that this event, this ceremony that we all said we did not want on Tuesday, we said no ceremony, no burial of remains. That's what we all agreed on that call. And we were waiting for the hear back from the city. And while we're waiting to hear back from the city, I get a call about Joy McConduchy putting casket pods on Facebook. They're being put in the ground on a Thursday. So if we're the Public Oversight Committee, how could that be? And how such a disconnect, intentional disconnect from the city, right? And if they're not communicating with them, they're moving on anyway. That's how we're finding out this. So y'all take it from there.
Yeah, but Gina's right. And like she said, that we had a meeting that Tuesday. We voted as a body to postpone this burial and / ceremony. So we left thinking that it was postponed. And then as we, Thursday morning come, I get a text from Kevin Ross, our chair, stating that the city has decided to rebury the remains and have a ceremony with or without us. And he texted that to me and Vanessa, and it was your home number, Regina, on there. So she didn't get it. Yeah, so she didn't get it.
And they're very well aware of what my cell number is. So anyway, moving right along.
And so I called Chief, but I think you had Albert. Did you know? Mm-hmm. I think, okay, I called Chief, and Chief was, you know, of course, we were all like, what the heck is going on? So we tried to reach out to everybody from our chair to, then we get an email, I think, but
Thursday night at 4:50. That's the end of business day.
Yes, and it's in.
What did it state?
Well, the email just basically said they're going to do the ceremony and the reburial. It didn't answer any of our questions
right.
that we had. It was just saying that that was what was going to happen.
And they did acknowledge. They said, we understand that you all have submitted several questions. However, we're going to discuss the ceremony. Right. That's the way of saying we're not answering nothing y'all are asking at this mm-hmm. moment. We're going
right.
to move on and do what we want to do.
Right. So Regina called a press conference, and we would try to get ahead of it, let community know we do not agree with what's going on, and just being telling the truth and being transparent as an oversight committee should be. And so that's what we did, and here we are.
So they decided to do what they wanted to do. After you submitting all kinds of questions and stuff to the city.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did we submit the questions, we were so explicit with the rationale, the lack of rationale, and how unscientific their science was, that we were able to convince the scientist that we were right by the end of our conversation on Tuesday. And what I mean by that, I mean so much so, Phoebe Stubblefield, the forensics investigator, was like, hey, I mean, Chief's spot on with the assessment that he has made. What was the assessment? This is for the community at large, because the public needs to know just how bad we're being manipulated, not just as an oversight committee, all of our community, right? The question was asked, why are you asking us to plan a commemoration haphazardly when you haven't even finished your job, right? The scope of your work has not been completed. We ask critical questions. Have you analyzed the remains? Do you know what race they are?
Yeah.
Have you done everything?
No FBI investigation. No, right?
Forget FBI. The mayor called it a homicide investigation. We have not seen any homicide investigator on site since the beginning of this process.
Oh, wow.
And Chief, let me ask, I'm not seeing a medical examiner. I read this report
right.
today and was talking about the medical examiner that's going to work closely with the city. I'm like, since when and where?
So you got all of these problems that show up, right? So they said the scope of our investigation mm-hmm. involves 17 black men who are affected by trauma, violent trauma. So I said, what you're telling us is you have excluded the most marginalized people on the planet who happen to be black women and black children from the entire investigation. So all those remains that we're finding, you're saying basically, well, we're not looking for them. Literally, that's what you're saying, because you have a scope. You have a simplified scope about what you're looking for. So once again, you're marginalizing the history of what happened to our people. I expressed, what about Bristol Hospital and the maternity ward? Right? Ain't nobody ever talked about the victims of the hospitals that was burnt down. No record, no conversation in nobody's book, in nobody's conference, in nobody's lecture. You ain't never heard nobody mention the hospitals and what happened to all those remains. Now you start finding all of these babies lined up in this cemetery, and the man who actually represents your evidence is buried right next to the babies. And you want to say this is outside the scope of our investigation, or our contract, our agreement was based on the following principles. They didn't even say the following principles, because they couldn't even outline it. To this date, we still don't know what's outlined in this so-called contract. All we know is that you have a scope, and I said, all right, fine. If you got a scope, you got a whole cemetery you need to dig up, because you still ain't found what you're looking for. But outside that, the public needs to know. Because you got some people who think we done disturb remains that don't have nothing to do with the massacre. Well, let me keep it simple for you. When you look in the ground
and you see coffins and people who are buried in the wrong direction, right? Displaced in this area that's
on top
supposed,
of each
yeah,
other.
In this area that's supposed to be disturbed. And you got a mixture of victims, children, women. You got a woman who was 7 months pregnant in the site, in the same site that you called a mass grave, right? Just based on how they formatted and how they laid in the ground is enough evidence, enough information to show you ain't nothing orthodox about this location, right? You got all of this evidence right in front of you. And I said, see, now if you had a homicide investigator on the scene, I guarantee the story would be a little different because you're not reading it as an anthropologist. You're not reading it as a forensic scientist. You read it now as a homicide investigator. But because you don't have that accountability, this is where the mayor is all up in this. But you have zero accountability as it relates to this being a crime scene. Because people are treating it like this is some archaeological investigation. The Oversight Committee has the authority to make sure that these people get recovered or buried again. The last email he sent us, he says, we are going to rebury the individuals that were excavated. They reburied everybody, including the 14 that had not been touched. So my question was, how can you be done and you still got 14 exposed coffins in the ground? So for all those people who stand outside that gate who said, I got a relative who might be in that trench, you just buried. Now officially, the city of Tulsa has created a mass grave site because you now have participated in the second cover-up of the first one because you knowingly have remains in the ground that you chose to cover up. And we kept asking, who made the decision to end this investigation? Nobody could answer the question. So Rojas decides to throw the forensics team under the bus. Oh, we taking their lead. They said, we don't know who made that decision.
And they were ready to move further south.
Yes.
They were ready to keep digging further south.
So that Thursday before the last press conference, I asked Carrie Steckelbeck, I said, what is the next plan? She said, the plan is, we're going to go further south because we think there's a pattern now.
And they stopped, right?
Yep.
So, right. Who does that in a crime scene? Mm-hmm. The moment you find evidence, you expand the investigation. You bring in all your specialists and everybody that need to come on board. That's what you do in a crime scene. But in this case, they found evidence. Then abruptly, it was that afternoon when Christy called me and said, I think we're going to be doing a vigil on Friday because they said that they're done. And I said, what? That can't be. I was just there at 7 o'clock this morning. And Carrie said, we're going further to the south. I just got to get permission from the city. Now, what that tells me is that this is not about a contract. This is not about something, all the stuff that you're hearing in the media. This is about something much more sinister and deeper than that. Right? We're just not putting all the players together, making people talk. So that now we got a recording of Tuesday's meeting. Every day since that meeting, I have asked for that recording. Do you think I've got a copy of it yet? It don't take no energy for you to go in, get that recording, and send us the link.
But they managed to go and get the energy to send you about four other videotapes from in the past that we did not ask for. The one that Chief is asking for has not been produced.
Yeah.
But if you can take the time to go back into your archives and find all them old meetings that we did to tell us what we said, then you can pick up this most recent meeting so we can tell the public what you've said.
Absolutely. So to follow up, you know, everything was rush, 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 4:51 p.m. We get an email saying basically we're going to do what we want to do. It's not going to be formal, right? Then I got people calling me saying, hey, what's going on? My brother, he had a Professional Firefighters Association. He said, yeah, they want me to do a flag ceremony and all of this stuff. I said, oh, really? Well, let me tell you what's going on with that. He said, all right, let me call him and tell him we're not doing that. So you got a lot of people who backed out at the last minute. Pastor Cooper, he was like, no, we're not engaging in this mm-hmm. this fallacy, this cover up, this conspiracy.
Right.
Right. Now you got so 4:51 hit. Christy texted me that morning, I'm saying at this point, we got to take legal action. We don't have no options. Right. So I called Eric Miller, DeMario. I said, hey, listen, we got to do something. So now we on the wire trying to get something done at the last hour. We finally get a restraining order put together. We put out a restraining order without notice. Just couldn't get it to a judge's desk in time. because it had to be done before they started covering the bodies up.
And they covered them up.
They did, quickly.
You know, I went back that night, and I just went over there at the cemetery by myself, and I just looked over there at the tree. Probably was a hanging tree at one time. But and I saw those bodies just covered up. What was it, 14? 13?
It's 14 left in the ground untouched.
Untouched.
They reburied 19.
Right.
Yeah, 19. Children included, right?
Yeah.
And they stopped digging going south.
The moment you find evidence, you stop your investigation. And in all these conversations that we've had over since Tuesday, not once did they mention, well, this is what you guys decided back in March, that we would have a reinterment, a temporary reinterment. They never once even mentioned that. That was never even part of the conversation, right? Because they understood the conditions that we made in relationship to the reburial process. When you finish your job and we get a report of what happened and what you discovered, we didn't get that. We didn't get a homicide report. We didn't get any of those things.
Are they fearful? They're always trying to hide something, isn't it? It's cover up stuff.
Trying to protect.
Protect
something.
Yeah, something. It's always
not hide something. Protect something.
Protect something.
Accountability.
And I just wanted to add to that when we were talking about timetables, and we were like, who decided that your work was completed when last we heard you're going to be going south, right? So they send us out way after the fact, right? They sent us out some emails today. Is it today or yesterday? Anyway, so I open it up. I read it. And it says, Statement of Research Project Proposal, Tulsa Mass Grave Excavation, Oakland Cemetery, Summer 2021. So that's right now, right? And then I go in further and I read, and it says, they're given a timetable. It actually says timetable. And it says the excavation and exhumation process are expected to begin June 1st, 2021 and be completed by August 31st, 2021. The report is expected to be delivered no later than April 19th, 2022. Now, you look at that, that's them talking, right? It wasn't discussed with us, but they're not even fulfilling that timetable. And even in this, in reading this document, it says there may be some circumstances that would have them to modify their search. So it seems to me if you come across somebody with a bullet in the skull, you would then modify what you're doing, and then the forensic anthropologist might say, we're going to go further south. But that's where they pause. So they're even contradicting this, which we just got today or yesterday, whenever it was.
That's a trip to me.
They just released an article from the Washington Post an hour ago.
Uh-huh.
I was just looking at that.
Uh-huh.
See their responses. The man, it's crazy.
It's crazy. It's too stupid. You know what gets me is they can go and discover dinosaur bones. You feel me? Archaeologists can go, but they having problems and not wanting to. They're not bringing the proper equipment, I think, to discover these human remains.
Well,
go ahead.
I was going to say, first of all, proper equipment has to be the wheel and the heart to do the right thing.
Exactly.
So let's start there.
They can discover dinosaur bones way deep down in the
ground. And we've had numerous people that have offered the state-of-the-art technology. They've offered money to participate in this process and to help fund it, and they've always been rejected at every turn. And we talked about that at the city council subcommittee.
So the city rejects them.
Yes.
Yeah, we actually had myself, Christy, Greg, and some other people, we had a private meeting with OSU, OSU's archaeological team. They offered the work for free. They said they'd already had the conversation with the mayor. They didn't want no drama. You know, they said it's all state money. If it's a university, it's all state money. It shouldn't matter, right? This was about preference. It was about controlling the narrative. It was about controlling how the word get out, right? How this going to look. Because I'm certain that they knew they were going to find something.
And this document, to that point, this document says sole source, vendor, no other entity can do this work. And they talk about putting all this whatever, I don't know, and the word's not trust, but basically they're basically saying nobody else is going to do this work except who we say. And they got this ironclad contract. So I thought about all the folks that have come to the table and offered other folks that can help. And this is their response to that. No one else can do it except for these folks, which is absolutely untrue, because if that were the case, we wouldn't be having all the issues we have.
Wow.
We wouldn't be talking about the sonar equipment is not up to par, that they had some results that they were unanticipated.
Mm-hmm.
One time the guy was talking about the Big Mac trucks going through across the highway were interfering with his testing. You know, so, and for all the folks that are doing the best they can, we're also saying these folks are human. And clearly, if they have not, they don't believe, found the original 18 that they said they were looking for, right? Then, and I got questions about why they were looking for them in the first place, but that's a whole nother story. But being that they targeted that area, they're still saying they haven't found that yet.
Wow.
National Geographic even offered.
And the Air Force. The Air Force said they have technology that that's non-invasive.
Non-invasive.
And they should have took it up, because Scott Hammerstedt, on day one, June 1st, when I was out there, I asked him, how is it you were able to find an anomaly 15 feet deep in the first trench that we dug 15 feet deep in, but you couldn't find all of these remains 7 feet deep? Like, how does that work? He said it don't, because the soil is so conductive that it's kicking the signal back up. So whatever you think you might see is actually could be nothing or something. So basically what that means is we spent our tax dollars using technology that don't even work. They should have tested the soil first before they even did all of that.
Mm-hmm. And also to that point, after the first time they attempted, right, and they didn't have anything, remember, and we said this in the meeting and another public oversight meeting, that they were certain, and I said it to the archaeologists, you all were certain that you were going to find something. And I said, isn't that because you all looked at the 20-year study that the first commission had produced? And it said in those pages, they gave the exact location where there were anomalies, where there's something underground. So they went off of 22-year-old material. That's how they knew to go to that area and that there was going to be something under there. That's how they were so certain. So they didn't even have to rely on his equipment in 2021. They could rely on the records that they had. And there were remains there where they dug. It's just that they didn't find what they thought they were going to find.
And we don't really know, because they didn't dig them all up.
Yeah.
So in that first great site, we found all those remains, the first 12, only there's still 7 of them untouched in the original mass grave trench. Like, you done went and told the whole world that we found a mass grave site, but you leave 7 of them in the ground. So for all of those families that's on edge saying, hey, I hope they find my relatives.
You mean they only pulled about 4 or 5 of those bodies out of that?
Out of that main, out of trench A, there were 12. There are 7 remaining that were untouched. How do you explain that?
Just pull 4.
That's it.
And Chief, let me just add to that. That larger, broader story, we do know that the first report they were looking at, they were looking for remains and, as they said, plain wooden boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So they were focused on these plain wooden boxes. And so I think that helps, I think, expand the story in terms of where her focus was.
Right.
But to your point, when there's something that's unorthodox and they're not quite sure what they've stumbled upon, then, you know, I don't have much faith that the reports that they're going to be presenting are going to be able to give us anything that detailed, because we don't have a process right now. If we're talking about descendants of possible victims, they have nothing in place right now that if you've taken this DNA, how do you match it up with a human being today if you haven't even started a process? You haven't asked folks to come in and, do you know this person that was shot in 1921? Are you connected to this person that was burned to death, right?
Was this your relative?
Yeah, they have not. And they know some names. Mm-hmm. And so they haven't started that process. And, they've actually said, well, that's a good point. That work should have begun, but that's just not our field. And the historical committee mm-hmm. That's supposed to be looking into that. They haven't met, and I don't know when, right? So that told me a long time ago there was not a real genuine effort to connect DNA to ancestors.
So what are they going to do? What's going to be the process? Do we know?
Well, they're going to follow a process that other people have done in the past. They just don't have one established, period, right? And it's that the same process they mentioned early on, because they were basing it off of academic information, right? You gather all the – you create a database where you gather the names of people who say they have missing relatives. Then you set up a space or a period in time where you collect DNA from those people and match it up with the DNA that you now have in your system. Right now they claim to have created a database of the DNA that they've taken from.
But
the,
we don't know. We don't have many. We don't know how many remain.
We don't know if it's been done at all.
One for sure. She said she's taking DNA.
Saying, yeah. Regardless, we don't have nothing. We don't have a receipt.
Right.
Right. We have word of mouth, but we don't have a receipt. We've never gotten a report mm-hmm. that says this is the end. This is a finalized. This is the end of our contract. Here are the findings. We don't have none of that, which was part of the reason we agreed. Then let's hold off till you get it. Right. Because if we don't do it this way, my exact words were. Public opinion says you found evidence and you covered it up. You don't have no other narrative. And even if you had done all the analysis, we didn't agree to do it that way. And you left out this whole entire community. And just like look at what was out there. They pulled down a fence. Okay, if they pulled down a fence, they could put up a fence and all of the public could have been inside that space. And been able to do whatever they want to do. Their fear was they're going to look in that ground and say, whoa, 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 wait. Why? What? Those coffins ain't even touched. They will be able to see what we saw. That is the issue. And since we believe they were not going to cover them up because we agreed, how do you sit in on a vote, listen to these, and acknowledge, yeah, that's a good idea. But then you go turn around and do the opposite of what we asked you to do. Because we know, we like we said in the very beginning, before we even became an oversight committee, my commentary was, Mr. Mayor, how can you investigate yourself and prosecute yourself at the same time? That is my concern. You can't. Conflict of interest. So that means eventually we will have to call in outside investigators to investigate what we found here. Otherwise, that's why we said when we did the press conference, we're not going to be participants in a grand scheme, a conspiracy and cover-up. We're not. We're going to express to the community what they need to know, let the world know, put information out every way in any way we can, and force them to tell the truth about this issue. That's why they won't give us that recording, because that recording would be the tell-all, because now you got your science team agreeing with us. That this was not the end. We don't know who made the decision to make the call mm-hmm. to stop. That right there kills every lie that's in every news publication right now. The only people that got the truth is World One Development through Eden Media Services. They're the only ones who got the truth, the mm-hmm. full truth. So we sit and we watch and we wait. Then they set us up to say, okay, then we're going to have to file for Open Records Act. You either give it to us voluntarily or you once again prove that you are in fact covering up information that proves you wrong.
Mm-hmm. And I want people to recognize the passion that Chief has right now. It does not change. This has been him in every meeting. Same for Regina. This is the oversight
same
committee.
For Christy.
But I just want people to see that, because then, you know, people have came to me and said, I told you so. I told y'all. That's why I didn't want to be me. I told y'all. I've had people say that. But they don't understand the reason why Vanessa had us on this oversight committee is for this very reason right here, to be an oversight. So I want to address those people who have said, I told y'all. That's why I didn't want to be bothered with it. I told y'all. But this is why we have to be in these spaces. Because just imagine if we were not there, what would have happened. This, they would have been done with this a long time ago.
And for anybody that says, I told y'all, had it not been for Representative Don Ross and the late Senator Maxine Horner, it was their charge 20 years ago when they said, listen, if we find remains, we want there to be a final and more sacred resting place. And see, we owe it to them also to continue the work. So for all the folks say, I told y'all, and they ain't going to do right, we didn't say folks were going to do right. We said we're going to do right.
That's right.
Right? And we're going to continue to do the jobs that we have to do because, again, we owe it to the ancestors. And as God is my witness, again, as long as we're sitting here, as long as we're able, we're going to try to do the right thing. So for all the folks that didn't want to do it, said don't go down that path, again, I don't think it would be doing justice to Representative Ross, who's still with us today. God bless him. And to the late Senator Horner, if we did not do what we're doing. So
yeah,
that's where our position is.
I believe that, too. I think that we should have had our own burial ground, personally.
And we talked about
that. I just
that.
Think we should have had our own land, and we should have taken those graves who were buried by white people.
Mm-hmm.
Whites put them in that grave, and they haven't had a proper burial. Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, Bobby, legally, they have custody of those remains. If you cannot find I know you say legally or not,
right.
But I'm just saying it's not that simple. If that, if we could
well, I know it ain't.
I know
it's not that simple,
but keep in mind, the city owns Oaklawn. And understand this, I got to thinking about this the other day. From the very beginning, we were disadvantaged because
this,
they
Regina,
run that cemetery.
Has anybody
and they
ever
control
asked
custody.
Them, can the remains be relocated?
Yeah, we have. Of course, Bobby,
so
of course.
What was said?
Bobby, they maintain custody of the remains right now because they
own
this. No. It's the law. It's the law. Until you find next of kin, which you'd have to do through DNA and having a process in place, right? If we were to find a descendant that could say, hey, I want my mama moved over here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But understand, I think the fix was in, quite frankly, when we stayed in that area, when they refused to go out to Crown Hill, when they refused to go to other sites, because Crown Hill to this day, it's owned by a black man, said, Regina, I've been waiting on them for 2 years. I've asked them, y'all come on out. Never once did they even want to go out there to excavate. Mm-hmm. And he's an owner that said, unlike the other cemetery, Booker T. Washington,
mm-hmm.
Where we fought with him for 2 years because he's a private owner and he didn't want nobody out there. And the city, acting as if this was not a crime scene, kept listening to this private owner. Well, he doesn't want anybody out there. Well, you're going to do that for 2 years, and you're the city of Tulsa, and you're going to let this one man say, you can't come out here and look at a potential crime scene?
Mm-hmm.
That's not usually the way it works, but that's the way it's worked over the last 22 and a half years.
Mm-hmm. Man.
Yeah, how you think we feel? And we've been in the ground. But see, that's why we had to be out there every day. You know, I couldn't be out there every day, but I was out there every morning as much as
possible. I can't come out there.
Because I needed to. I felt like I needed to pray over them bones, right? Because there's no way, like nothing is in vain. I don't care what anybody say. We've been able to pray, even though we didn't have a proper, we still haven't had a proper mm-hmm. ceremony, a proper burial. We didn't waste time yeah. while we out there. Like we pouring libation. We asking them to respect the earth. We saying, look, the person they found with the that had the bullets in it, I helped carry those remains in. And my last words to his bones was, tell us why you're here. Nah, I didn't know that was the one. I said, tell us why you here. We waiting for your story. Tell us why you here, how you got here. Next thing I know, I'm hearing, oh, my God, guess what? That's they done found bullets in this one's, body.
How many bullets?
I don't know. We don't have a report.
See, no report, no
That's
numbers,
what I'm saying.
No nothing.
It was a few. I don't know the exact. But
yeah, that's what I'm
like
saying.
Three, but we're not, you know.
Yeah,
and they did report on that, and I just can't recall.
I'm saying we don't have documents.
Yeah.
We don't have a document that gives us forensic evidence that says this is how many bullets we found. You don't even have to find the bullets. You can look at the skeleton and tell how much damage was done to the skeletal remain. I mean, to the skeleton to determine the damage
in a trauma situation.
That's right.
And Phoebe said, Dr. Stubblefield said it would take, till another month she had out?
And then she said she doesn't really need a month. Really, she doesn't need a month, but she was provided a month, which, again, You know what? We got to keep we keep doing the work. It's tiring. It's frustrating. It's all of that. But guess what? We're not going through anything that my great grandmama didn't go through.
Mm-hmm.
That her great grandmama didn't go through. So the bottom line is this: the work ain't never been easy. Nobody said it was going to be easy.
And it continues,
right?
Yeah.
And it's ongoing. So so that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, look here. We're gonna take a short pause, a break, and then we're gonna come back. Discuss this some more. Oh man, it's real deep. It's real heavy. Hey, we're talking about the mass grave cover-up, city of Tulsa. Chief Christie and Regina are in the house. And if you want to call in, you can dial the number 646-716-5525. Take a little break. Hey, I gotta, yeah, do what I do. Oh, yeah, you're on the Bobby Eaton Show, where we tell our stories our way, located at 1533 North Norfolk, here in the heart of North Tulsa, North Tulsa Community Radio Station. You know, we put together over here, and we serve the community. We are all about the community, 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 bringing awareness. So if you have anything you'd like to discuss or talk, you can email us at eatonmusic2@gmail.com. Again, that's EATON music, the number 2@gmail.com. We'll review it, and if it's of interest to the community and to our people, then we'll talk about it. You know, these doors are open to anybody. I don't care what status you are or what you have. You know, it's not important to me. What's important to me is what you can do to bring about awareness to your people, African-American black people over here in North Tulsa, you know, and other places too as well. But we concentrate on North Tulsa, so that's what we're doing. In the studio, hey, Miss Christie had to leave, y'all. She had to get out of here. So we got, hey, we still got Chief and Regina in the house.
Yep.
And we're back, you know, and this discussion has been of a lot of interest. You know, a lot of information that's been delegated out to the community, well, to the world, anyone who's listening. So you can get this information that you didn't know anything about, you know, because we talk about it long term up in here. And going forward, where do you think we need to do and where we need to move? Or who we need to contact or what going forward?
Well, I think the big thing is we need to be informed, right? You can't move forward without good information, without the right information. You just can't do it, right? You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, you're just in a hamster wheel, and the people who are controlling the narrative are controlling the circumference of your thinking, right? And so we got to educate people. We got to make sure people are informed. We got to demand information, right? That's kind of why we're in this situation right now, right? The lack of transparency. All you're hearing them talk about is we are committed to transparency. We're committed to, you know what I'm saying? You're committed to lying. That's what you're committed to doing, right?
Transparency.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. And so, you know, the same people using people of color who don't think white is a color. But we got to be informed, right? That's our greatest weapon against any type of mental manipulation. And right now, they're trying to spin it and manipulate this story, this narrative as much as possible. And it's very clear to us on the inside as the Oversight Committee, because they just refused to offer up our recording of our meeting from Tuesday. They said, no, you're not going to do this to us or the community, right? The community deserves better. I specifically said, yeah, they deserve to be honored, but it's premature. You haven't done your job, right? When the community can say, be satisfied with your work and your contribution, right? It's like, and you don't have nothing to hide, right? There's no reason they couldn't have made a safe space in that space for people to participate if they wanted to participate. But it wasn't about them participating or not participating. It was about them seeing what they didn't do. You can't say the job is done, but you got these brand new white pods, and then you got these raggedy coffins that somebody threw in the ground, and people get to actually see it. It changes your perspective when you on the ground and you looking in that trench, right? You can't deny it at that point. You're not going to deny it at that point. That's your opportunity to say, we're not going to let them throw dirt in their face again. The community would have been able to see for themselves firsthand how terrible of a cover-up it is.
And it was definitely a cover-up when I went out there. Because I'm going to tell you what I saw, and I'm just going to speak it. What I saw was a bunch of white people over there with the graves and a bunch of black people locked outside the fence and the gate. A whole lot of us was outside the fence and hollering and yelling and back and forth. And they were over there praying and stuff and, you know, cameraman over there, and all of that was there. Over our people. They were doing the ceremony and the praying and stuff like that, and just over there, and probably some of them was workers. I'm pretty sure they were, but it was a bunch of white people.
That's why nobody want to answer the question.
Yeah.
Who made the decision to stop this investigation? Because the same
and
person.
They did, they stopped.
Because the same person who made that decision made the decision to cover them back up.
Mm-hmm. And this is not. You know, we don't have to be exceptionally smart. Again, the bottom line is Mayor Bynum is the leader of the city. He is a strong mayoral city council form of government. So he's making these decisions. That's the bottom line. And nobody else can be making that call to say move forward regardless of what the Oversight Committee is saying. Somebody had to order the casket pods to come in. Somebody had to order the drone that they had flying overhead when we didn't even know they were there.
Yeah.
So that doesn't happen just through happenstance.
No.
And what we had said is I'd asked the question a year ago, how long can remains remain above ground, right? And we asked it again on Tuesday, and the anthropologist said for years. So there was no rush to put these remains back down in the ground. There was no rush. And so, again, good questions were not answers. And if they were answered, they weren't good answers, right?
Not even that. It was mentioned. Let's not put them back here. We don't want them back in this mass grave trench. Put them somewhere else in the cemetery temporarily, right? And they was like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
And don't forget, somebody said they thought there was water down underground in the pit, that there was
water table.
Okay. And they thought that it would not be best at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They just said that on Tuesday.
It was dry
as
a bone.
And so I'm still asking that question. Is there water there? Is this the best place for these remains to be buried? Never got that answer. So we're told that by, you know, forensic scientists or forensic anthropologists. Yet on Tuesday, question never gets answered, and they're just doing what they wanted to do anyway on Thursday.
Yeah, prepping them pods took some time.
Yeah,
putting them
did.
In the ground took some time.
Yeah, did they put them in 6 feet?
They put them in the depth that they found them in. But those pods they're going to be above the depth because the ground is where they came out of. So the bottom of the pod, you saw how big the pods were.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So they're probably 2-3 feet above where they originally were.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they laid cardboard from what I could tell from the aerial pictures.
Yeah,
it looked
they
like
did.
They laid plywood on top of the other ones.
Exactly. I saw the plywood,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I saw the little babies.
The pods, yeah.
Pods, you know.
Yeah.
With the babies and things like that. That made me sad, too, as well. Oh, man. Now, are they going to exhume those bodies again?
Well, those are the questions we've been asking. Like,
once you bury them back down in there, are you going to go later on and dig them back up again?
That's why we ask about a budget.
That's
what,
right.
What? How much money do you have? What assurance do we have that this work is going to continue? Because where they're talking about they're going to pause again, the question was, this is really a pause or is this a period? Right, and you're telling us we're just pausing. We're going to get the documentation together, and again, if you
and
don't,
then we're going to dig them up again.
Yeah, but again, you know, we don't know.
We don't know,
and so that's always been a concern.
We don't know because see, Tuesday they spent a good portion of time trying to express to us why they didn't dig, why they didn't excavate the other remains, and their excuse was it does not fit the scope of what we're looking for. Now, if they're telling us that, that means they're not going back to it because it don't fit the scope. But we argued the definition of the scope, and we did so with great, you know, with a lot of
rigor.
Yes, and intellect
and vigor.
Right, just science, just basic science based on the historical information that we have. Like based on the historical information we have, the fact that it's nothing orthodox, because they're saying we're looking for patterns and we're looking for what the heck you think this. And I even said, y'all were talking as if the people who put them in the ground had some moral responsibility. Like this is a mass grave. You think they care about these black bodies that went in the ground? They don't. But y'all are treating them as if these people are, you know, they were decent. They wanted to treat these folks with respect. But look at how they buried. Disoriented. One man's body was contorted because his body was too big for the coffin. So they had to contort his body to fit him into the coffin. Like, what's the pattern in that? Right? You got babies next to shot up victims, next to pregnant women, next to a man that's contorted, next to people that's turned in the wrong direction. Gave you more than enough evidence and information for you to say there is nothing orthodox about this. We could potentially declare this whole entire area as part of a mass grave from 1921. We just need permission to go further south. Like Carrie said, I think we have a pattern now because we're seeing victims, babies. We're seeing all of these different arrangements and assortments that
they
don't.
They just threw them in there.
Of course. And then you got some that's in crates. And mm-hmm. Clyde Eddie talked about bodies being put in crates. Right? So...
Mind you, Chief, the Clyde Eddy spot that they've not gotten to, and we've been asking for 22 years.
I know, but what I'm saying is if Clyde Eddy saw crates, he didn't say he saw them in the ground.
Yeah.
He just said he saw crates in an area.
Yeah.
I'm simply saying those crates could have went anywhere,
mm-hmm.
and we need to investigate. They found crates. So you don't think that's – and what did Carrie say? Oh, my God, I thought the same thing. That was the first thing that came to my mind.
Now, the other part of that is she saw that, and we had this discussion.
Yeah, we did.
That she said they then determined that it wasn't a crate as in a carrier crate as much as a container. But even that explanation said, well, why is that down in the ground?
Exactly. Like
right?
Red flag.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, man. This is so crazy. You know what I'm saying? I can't,
wow.
Man. It, I mean, it literally make me want to... The rage, man, that I'm containing, I could probably dig up the rest of those remains. You know what I'm saying? Without a backhoe. It's just like I can't even express what this journey has felt like and what it's been like. But I can tell you I'm not fueled by sorrow. I'm not fueled by pain. I'm fueled by rage at this point. Like, and just the fact that I can hear, and not my own necessarily. I can hear, I was telling Dr. Alicia Odewale, I said, you know what the problem is? When you see them babies, you start hearing, you start hearing screams of children, of babies, right? You start hearing that and you go to sleep with that. And you figure, okay, let me, we got to figure out how we're going to get this done. How are we going to work this out? And all while hearing all of the side talk and the naysayers and all of that, you dealing with all of that all at the same time. And you try to stay so committed, stay focused and so direct that you don't let them ancestors down. Like you finally got a chance. If somebody killed you 100 years later, we digging up your remains. The people who are putting that work in, they need to be so committed and so dedicated because the energy that it took just for you to be heard long enough to be like you sent a 100-year message that just now got heard. And the right people heard it and found your remains. We have we ain't even touched the level of spiritual obligation that we have. We ain't even touched the surface. The fact that they covered them up, you watch how the city is going to deal with that. Know how the city is going to have to the karmic agreement that they made when they covered those grounds up. You just created a karmic agreement with the whole freaking universe. Like you think, you know, and you hear people say, well, God, you know, they're asking us to pray for you. Think God is looking? How you think God is looking at this? How you think God looked at that ceremony the day y'all prayed over them bodies? That's what you need to ask yourself because you did that for yourself. That was a self-based move. That wasn't a selfless move. That wasn't a spiritual move based on God's interpretation of what your acts and what you did on this day. God is saying, those are my children that you're covering up. I gave you the intellect and asked you to use your intellect and your wisdom and your heart to do the right thing. And you failed again.
They talked about at the subcommittee at the city council meeting with Councilwoman Harper today, and they were talking about, well, we need to know, well, who's responsible? You have the city council members asking who's responsible. Now, when you have a city council member and you have to say to the city council member, the mayor, you know, this is a strong mayor, city council form of government. So when we come after 2.5 years and we're asked that question, right? And they're talking about, well, we know we want to restore trust. You can't restore trust unless trust has already been established. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to establish trust because there's none to be restored because we don't have it.
Yeah. Yep.
This is so heartening and so just hard to hear
And Bobby, it's hard for you to hear and understand this. I think it's a matter of perspective, right? We got folks like you on the oversight committee, right? But we need folks like you leading the city. We need folks like you that care enough and want to carry it out to its fullest extent. And that's why when our shoulders are heavy, right? And we're like, oh, here we go. We're 100 years into this again. And it's now it's on our watch, right? And we're getting the same results as our ancestors. It is heavy. It is a burden, but that's because you care. Now, if you don't care, and if you can manipulate numbers, and if you can come out with reports and tell the community, well, the Public Oversight Committee agreed to this, and they said we're going to reinter the bodies. What's the problem? You got to understand the psyche that you're dealing with and the hearts that you're dealing with. So,
okay, let me ask you guys this question. Who selects the people that's over the Oversight Committee? Who selects those people? And is there a vote or a channel, or how do you get to that point?
Well, they're elected. You're talking about
elected by
well,
who?
No, well, first of all, if we're talking about the mayor of the city.
No, you're talking about the Oversight Committee?
Oversight Committee.
Okay.
How did that come about?
In terms of the people that are on the Oversight Committee?
Yeah.
Like you guys.
I had to ask to be on there.
Right.
Because I was not on the original list of folks that they had on the Oversight Committee. And I went to the mayor and I called him and I said, you know, I'm a descendant of race massacre survivors. I would like to be on this committee. It's not like, hey, he was jumping for joy to have me there.
No.
But he was cooperative enough and willing enough to allow me to be on the Public Oversight
Committee.
So
he makes the choice?
And
he made the future choices. We just simply volunteered.
And I also think
you guys have a committee, and only
and I think Councilwoman Harper had some say.
Well, she made sure, yeah.
And half of the committee only participates, right? You're saying some
less
of them.
Less than half.
Well, you have to be informed. You got to be informed of the meetings, though. There are a number of folks that told me, Regina, I haven't been told about a meeting, let alone been allowed
to
cooperate.
Well, all you got to do, when I hit reply all, I see who's on those emails.
Yeah, and I know
who's not on there, and I know who is. If we got 14 people who are recipients to 18 people who are recipients, and only four show up all the time.
Well, I don't know if only four show up all the time. I know when we were meeting in public, right, and we had a physical place for folks to meet.
I'm talking about once we went.
But you have to also be right there on your emails, looking at them, waiting for that. So I heard from folks that said, I haven't been contacted more. How are they reaching out to folks? So I wouldn't necessarily say it's because of a lack of interest. I think it's been a lack of communication and keeping those connections.
Well, it's
but
it's,
for whatever the reason.
I'm just saying, I know personally, I've reached out and reminded people, and you still don't get input. Like, okay, why are we on this call together? But going back to your question, you got to remember, Vanessa put this issue out first with the Washington Post, right? Then the mayor followed him.
Okay.
Yeah, the mayor followed suit really fast. It was just a couple of days later. The mayor suddenly announces he's going to do an investigation after Vanessa put Tulsa on Front Street about the mass graves. That ain't accidental. Also, Vanessa, who said, you better make sure you put some community people on whatever it is you're trying to do. So she invited some people in who had an interest, who've been dealing with this issue for a very long time, like Regina said. So we bringing in our knowledge, our expertise, our commitment to the very issue we're talking about. Making sure that you have a voice, making sure you have people who are willing to say the truth. How can you do this? What is the investigation really going to look like? Because all we're hearing is you just called this a criminal investigation. That was our immediate first response. Like, okay, you can't possibly be serious about prosecuting yourself. This got to be a joke. I need to hear this myself, right? So that's the first question. And you're like, well, yeah, you know, you raise a good question. I don't need you to tell me that. I need you to answer the question. Like, how do we proceed from this point? So you got those people. And then since then, they started adding who they wanted to add to the oversight committee, the city. Yeah, started adding people like Native American groups, different people like that. They started adding in people. And I'm starting to see our list of names just stack up and add up. Right? That's not a problem. But we're not seeing no input.
The bodies are just there.
Yeah, we're not seeing what's your purpose in being present.
No work is being done by these people.
It's just us. And that's a problem. Even when they want us to come up with this temporary reinterment, they wanted me, Turner, and Kevin to make the decision. I protested it. I said, you can't put that pressure on us. We're not in a position as a body, as the three of us, we're not in a position to make a decision for a collective body this big. And we're not going to. And after that, I said, we need to have our own private meeting without the city. Right?
I agree with that.
So they ain't trying to control what we say. Look at what happened now. Now we asking them to give us a recording of our own meeting. After I done said previously, when we have private meetings, we need to set up the meeting ourselves. Because when we don't do that, we run into situations like we in right now. That meeting should not have been organized by the city. That should have been our meeting inviting whoever we want to be part of the call that could answer our questions. That's why I said, before we had this meeting, Mr. Rojas, can the people who are on this call that you invited answer my questions? Since they don't work for the city, I know they can't tell me why a homicide investigator is not on the ground or why a medical examiner is not on the ground, because that ain't your job. That's not your role. But they trying to pass the buck onto the scientists to answer all of our questions. And I see why, because, you know, every time we talked about something related to justice or criminal charges, it was always the science team responding, primarily Phoebe Stubblefield.
And she made it clear that she could not answer those questions.
Yeah,
she was
finally.
Saying, that's not my role, right? none of those meetings were, like I say, all of this was by design. The folks were present that wanted to be present and the folks that were representing the city, all of that they understood. And so we are where we are, but it's not as if we were unaware from day one.
Can those non-participants be removed?
would even say this. I would imagine with any committee, any commission, oftentimes there are a lot of folks that are on a body of, right? And again, typically it's just a few folks that actually do the work. So I'm not making excuses for folks, but I do know that's human nature. And I know schedules and et cetera, and a lack of communication and wondering why I haven't met in 4 months. What are they talking about? So whatever the reason, those folks not being fully engaged, I know some wanted to be. Some actually said, we haven't gotten messages for our committee in I don't know how long. So I don't think it was.
Yeah, I don't. But I'm talking about our committee. You got four different committees.
Yeah.
Because like even Alicia Odewale, she made it a point to express, why am I being left off these emails? Because I'm on all three committees. Like she had to address Rojas about that very issue. This is our archaeological, cultural archaeologist who had to ask, why am I being excluded from these calls? I should have been on that private meeting, but I'm not getting any correspondence. And I'm looking at the emails and her name ain't on none of them.
Wow.
And she's saying as far as the other committees, they ain't even meeting no more.
Right.
Which is probably why there ain't no correspondence with them.
Of course. And like I say, none of this is an accident. It's all I keep saying. This is by design. The lack of communication, the dismantling or the non-communication to the committees. Well, they know, hey, they have, I think, in their heads when they wanted to bring this to a conclusion. And, you know, and basically, as the email said today, we understand that you all had some questions and blah, blah, blah. However, this is what the city is going to do. So when you get that kind of email, what is the point of having a public oversight committee if you're going, once again, just herd us into a decision, right, and act as if somehow we were complicit? So we, again, are saying that we're not going along with the lack of transparency. That's why we speak to it. And we didn't just start today. We've been asking these questions for years.
Yep. I mean, I even asked, like, who in their right mind would rebury these victims back in the same cemetery where you got people like Tate Brady who participated in the massacre? Like, you would never bury Jews in the same cemetery as Hitler or Nazi, you know, war criminals. That would never happen. It wouldn't even be a discussion, right? Like, who does that? And they, you know, they went on to say, well, you know, there are people who are relatives of survivors who are buried out here. And I said, the difference is they had a choice. The people in this ground didn't have no choice. Families didn't even know that they was put here. So how do you even make that parallel? Just to say that is insensitive. Right? Like, it makes no sense. None of it. Like, what kind of psychosis is this?
Oh, boy. Something to really think about and process. You know, African-American people have been in the struggle for years. Not only did this happen in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but Elaine, Arkansas, Rosewood. We've been going through trauma and BS for years. We've been fighting in the struggle for life. People have died, even in the civil rights movement, and people have lost their lives, and we still struggle. You know, when the centennial was here, May 31st, I saw all these highfalutin celebrities and people come to town, all of these high-profile people, you know what I mean, come to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And upon arriving here, they some of them even came to this radio station. And I was saying all along, I said, well, when this big party is over with, we still here. We still have to deal with the trauma of our community because our community is traumatized. They really are. And we need some healing. We need some healing, and as people in the struggle like yourselves and me and everybody out here trying to fight in this war in Tulsa, Oklahoma, one of the most racist cities in the nation, that's what I feel. it's just quite so much a struggle that you don't ever know from day to day what's going to happen around here. You know, you don't know if police are going to arrest or shoot somebody. You don't know if they're going to, they put down bicycle trails on our street. Now they're going to take them up, and you got to fight for so many rights here in Tulsa. It's a struggle. Sometimes I just shake my head and I say, wow, a lot of the mainstream, I got a media company right here. Mainstream media come over here all the time looking for stories, black stories. I don't tell them nothing. I only tell them what I want them to hear. They never report on good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't ever hear them talking about Pocket Full of Hope, Reed Community Center, Carver Center, over here at Eat Meat Juice Radio Show. You ain't gonna never hear them talking about none of that stuff. But the minute someone gets shot and killed over in our community, boom, it's big news. And we fall for that because that's what we see in our community.
Man, let me speak to that. You know what we fall for? Our police chief, he made a traumatized man. Let me get my words right,
words
so
like
I don't cuss. I'm gonna get my words right.
We can't cuss on the radio.
Like, let me get my words right. Okay. All right. So what I'm trying to say is, our police chief made the decision to quote unquote sarcastically say, "Where are all the protesters at when the last murder happened in our community?"
He said that.
Did you?
Yeah, he did. And Chief, to that point, because I think we know Chief Franklin's history.
Mm-hmm.
I think we know he was the one black officer many, many years ago during the black officer's lawsuit that said there was no racial bias
mm-hmm.
in the city of Tulsa. He's the same man when he was appointed as chief that said he still says there's no racial bias on the Tulsa Police Department. That's why he is
the chief of the Tulsa Department.
Okay. Now, when he made that statement, I clearly saw it as a provocative statement.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to trigger somebody and to trying to respond to him.
Of course.
He has continued to show this community who he is, and he has never, ever, when we asked him to come out and meet with us, and he said that he would, and then he reneged and said, well, his folks said he's only supposed to work with people that want to work with the police department, right? Mm-hmm. This is a guy that I'd invited out. Right. So when he makes that statement, for me, that's par for the course. And it was not really deserving of a response because he was trying to trigger an emotion. We know that the Tulsa Police Department, we're going to come to you when police officers are murdering black men and women. You're absolutely going to hear from us. And no, you might not hear from us when we're just asking you and you're expected to do your job.
That's right.
So if you
that's
see
right.
crime on the street, you signed up for
that's
it. That's
right.
your job.
That's right.
Right. And there ain't going to be no protesters to come out and
mm-hmm.
say, hey, right? And, yes, we've been out there when there's been black crime. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We've done that also.
Mm-hmm.
But please don't think that you're going to trigger this
right.
community into responding to your nonsense because you have not served this community
that's right.
properly.
That's
right?
right.
You continue to cater to the very folks that pay you every week or every month or however you get paid. And so that was par for the course as far as I'm concerned as it related to Chief Franklin. And I did not want him to be chief. I told him that in a conversation. He was not the choice to be the chief for this community. But because he was chosen, how do we work together? And this is a man that has proven over and over and over again. He's committed to the status quo. He had some young boys out there talking about, you know, they need to see officers in a space where we can play football or basketball or whatever. We're not talking about public relations. We're talking about community policing. We're talking about what does it mean to have real transformative justice
That's
in
right.
Tulsa. And he does not represent that. So basically what he did is he represented himself in those statements.
Mm-hmm. He sure
he
did.
Showed America who he is.
That's right.
And there is no community deserves that. And to anybody that chooses to protest the next murder, because it will happen, we continue to do those things because guess what? If you're not doing your job and you're out here murdering us, when you're supposed to be protecting the peace, yes, there are going to be protests, and yes, you're going to hear from us, and it will never be right. So sleep all you want or don't sleep, whatever it is that you do at night, but you're not going to trigger community into stupidity.
That's right.
Mm,
that's real.
That's deep.
That's real.
Okay.
That's how you close it out.
A lot of information. That's how we close it out, right? Hey, I want to thank you guys for taking time out of your busy schedule, because I know you're busy. Every day there's a challenge and things like that. And thank you, Chief. Thank you, Regina.
Appreciate you,
and
brother.
I always like to end on an upbeat note, because as long as you have three minds around the desk, right?
Right.
Taking the time, as you say, we are aspiring to greater things. We do believe in better, right? Or we wouldn't be here. And we leave out on that note, knowing that when I lay my head on a pillow tonight, I know that I've done my best.
Yeah.
And when you know you've done your best, then you can sleep well.
That's
Amen.
Real. You know, I'm a piggyback on what Regina just said, you know, bringing that high note. Two things I was thinking about. We so in sync right now. My grandma used to say, go to sleep like they're going to write your headstone tomorrow. Like live your day, live your day.
Mm.
But on top of that, when we went to Congress and I saw Miss Viola Fletcher testify and I listened to Uncle Red cry, a grown man from the diaphragm cry, I said, we don't have no excuse. There ain't no excuse for giving up. There's no excuse.
Can't give up. You're standing on those shoulders.
That's right.
You know. Well, thank you guys, man.
Thank you, brother.
I appreciate it.
You
know, this show is recorded and stuff like that for those who didn't get a chance to hear it. A lot of great information, you guys. So if you're out there listening, I know I got some fans who listen all the time because they don't ever know what's going to happen on the Bobby Eaton Show, where we tell our stories our way. We don't do it no other way. We tell them our way. And I just want to thank you guys for coming in here.
And that's truthfully. We tell our stories truthfully.
Yeah, truthfully.
Right.
All right, Regina and Chief. Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Bobby. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. All right. Bobby Eaton Show every Monday and Wednesday, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. And on Saturdays from 12 to 2 Central Standard Time. We're taking donations over here at Eden Media Services. We got a donation bucket that Chief set up, you know, a long time ago. I'm going to tell you what's happening, and we've been using it too. You know, anything helps for the Juice Radio Show, trying to send them to New York this time. We went to Atlanta, so now trying to send them to New York. Young people doing journalism. You can cash app us at Juice Radio Show. You know, just do the Juice Radio Show, Cash App, Ramal and Trey and all of them. And they're doing fundraisers, and we're trying to come up with money and trying to get money for a van and things like that. All right, Eaton Media Services, EATON, music2@gmail.com. Get in touch with us, and we will certainly respond to all of your requests and things of that nature right there. So we want you to be there. All right, and what else I got to say? I don't have too much more to say. But this is by Charlie Wilson right here, homeboy, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
I knew God was with me. I always used to pray. My prayer was I asked God to not to let the devil kill me out here while I was in the streets before I could get back. But I said, if you give me one more chance at life and music, I promise you, I'm going to shout you out, and I'm going to testify, and we're going to have a little church over there.
Waking up, thanking God. Every day is feeling just like Sunday. White sky by my side. Green light, everything is going my way. Riding clean, living dreams. Just left the barber and I'm feeling like Midas. Heard him say, give him praise. In the water, got you acting like this. Ain't a day go by that I don't try to thank the Lord up above. And if you wonder why I'm dropping light, I'm close and I tell you what's up. Ask me how I'm doing, I'm blessed, yes. Living every moment, no regrets. Smile up on my face, I'm like, oh, yes, I'm blessed, yes, I'm blessed, yes. Ask me how I'm doing, I'm blessed, yes. Living every moment, no regrets. Smile up on my face, I'm like, oh, yes, I'm blessed, yes, I'm blessed, yes. Playing cards, laughing hard, barbecuing, waking up the whole block. Music loud, turning loud. Little kids are breaking out the bus stop. Life is good, really good. And every moment, no, I can't forget. I gotta say, I won't change. You're the reason that I am like this. Ain't a day go by that I don't try to thank the Lord up above. And if you wonder why I'm loving life, come close and I tell you what's up. Ask me how I'm doing, I'm blessed. Yes. Living every moment, no regrets. Smile up on my face, I'm like, oh, yes, I'm blessed. Yes, I'm blessed. Yes. Ask me how I'm doing, I'm blessed. Yes. Living every moment, no regrets. Smile up on my face, I'm like, oh, yes, I'm blessed. Yes, I'm blessed. Yes, I'm blessed. I'm blessed, I'm blessed, I'm blessed. I'm blessed, I'm blessed, I'm blessed. I'm blessed, I'm blessed, I'm blessed.
Thank God for another day. Body way, nobody even found another way. I know trouble all around, try to tear us all down, but I gotta thank God every day for a grand. Know the devil working day and night. When I look him in the eye, I see you a day alive. And I know I could have died in that time. I'm still around because I hear word never comes to make him. And I'm up on the doing time, got a message for you. Might be stressing never, that's a blessing kind of point. And when it do through all the party and the nonsense, just take some time to thank God for what he done. When the partner you run with come with the negative comments, trying to get you to do something, you better not follow them down as I swear. I declare, so much power and prayer. You had no idea, God is always
there. Living every moment, no regrets. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm blessed, I'm blessed, I'm blessed. Ask me how I'm doing, I'm blessed, yeah. Living every moment, no regrets. I'm like, oh, oh yes, I'm blessed, yes, I'm blessed, yes, I'm blessed. I'm blessed, I'm blessed,
I'm blessed.
I'm blessed, I'm blessed, I'm blessed. I'm blessed, y'all. Oh, 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 I'm blessed. Butterflies is what I feel inside. Every time it's like my first time away, and I can never find the words to say. You're the perfect girl, you were made for me. It's so easy to love you, baby. We're compatible, credible, and natural we are. And girl, I never felt this way before. From the bottom of my heart, baby girl, I just wanna tell you that you are the reason I love, the reason I trust. God sent me an angel. You are the best thing in the world, a wonderful girl. Tears to my eyes, baby. Girl, you had me from the moment I looked into your eyes, and I knew you were an angel, but you were in disguise. Tell me, how could I be so lucky that you fall down from heaven for me? Look, baby,
people such a lifetime and never found a true love.
Every time enough for me to give me you. And now our hearts may be together, standing strong down here forever. You and I just want you to know you are the reason I love, the reason I try. Yeah.
when I come home at night. You're all that I see in my eyes. It almost feels not that loving you.
Yeah. WBOB, the home of the Bobby Eaton Show, the Juice Radio Show, and Two Dogs Radio Show.
Yeah. I do it big.
Okay.
You better R-E-S-P-E-C-T me.
Tulsa, Oklahoma. Stay connected and call us now at 646-716-5525 and press 1 to go live.
Sometimes the snow comes down in June. Sometimes the sun goes round the moon. I see the passion in your eyes. Sometimes it's all a big surprise. Cause there was a time when all I did was wish you tell me this is now. It's not the way I hoped or how I felt. Somehow enough. Now we're standing face to face. Isn't this world a crazy place? Just when I thought a chance had passed, you broke and saved the best. All of the nights you came to me, some silly girl had set you free. You wondered how you'd make it through. I wondered what was wrong with you. Cause how could you give your love to someone else and share your dreams with me? Sometimes the everything you're looking for is the one thing you can't see. But now we're standing face to face. Isn't this world a crazy place? When I thought a chance had passed, you go and save the best for last. Sometimes the everything you're looking for, the one thing you can't see. Sometimes the snow comes down in June. Sometimes the sun goes round the moon. Just when I thought a chance had passed, you broke and saved the best. You went and made the best.
Peace and Black Power. This is the Prince of Pan-Africanism, Dr. Umar Johnson. Whenever I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma, I'm listening to The Bobby Eaton Show, 89.9 FM KBOB, for news, information, and critical analysis. The Bobby Eaton Show, that's where Dr. Umar hangs out.
I'll never let you go till the end of time.
Forever in my heart.